or anything. We have to.
All right, that ends the reading tonight. We're on the second half of step 12. And I've chosen Bobby to speak tonight. And just for your own information, this is being recorded. As soon as Bobby's done, I'll turn the recording off.
Am I up now, John? John?
Buddy.
Am I muted?
No.
Go ahead, man.
Okay, can you hear me now? Okay. I'm Bobby, and I'm an alcoholic, a member of the West Barnstable Group. I'm going to talk about the second half of the 12th step. Last week, the guy who took me through the fifth, sixth, and seventh step and all that, had helped me to do that part of it. So having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics. And that's probably what he talked about last week. And I'm trying to, now I'm supposed to talk about practice these principles in all our affairs. So the thing is, I suppose I'm gonna start right from the beginning of how I did this. I've been around AA for about maybe 60 years or 61 years. And you can imagine I had some unfruitful years. The first 22 years that I had, I really didn't know what it was about. I thought it was about not drinking. That's as far as I ever went. And I don't know, I never thought of getting a sponsor. I didn't think of practicing any kind of 12 steps, or it was just to go to meetings and try to hang on and not drink. And I had a miserable sobriety for those years. And I started depending on detoxes that went from like New Jersey, Monsignor Wallace Place in Paterson, New Jersey, Dropkick Murphy's, Taunton State Hospital. I had like 22 of these between New York City and LA and here. I had a lot of detoxes. I'd be okay for a while because I was a binge drinker then, and then I'd go back, I'd go to AA, but I didn't know what it was about because I was so sick morally. I didn't know this was about morality. I thought that had nothing to do with it. I just thought if I stopped drinking, like the first step, we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Well, then I'd make a syllogism out of that and say, well, since when I drink, my life was unmanageable, I will not drink, therefore, my life will be manageable. That's wrong. That was the biggest mistake I ever made, to think that all I had to do was to stop drinking, because it never gave me any kind of serenity or any kind of grace or anything. I was just bitter all the time because I didn't have my bottle, my baba. Freud one time said the alcoholic, he calls his the alcoholic his majesty the baby. So I want what I want when I want what I want it. And if I don't get it, I'm going to cause a lot of problems. So a drunk without a drink is a sad thing. It's a terrible thing. At least it was to me. And so I didn't know how to live. I didn't know what AA was about. I didn't know what morality is about, because when I started drinking when I was a kid, maybe 17 or 18, and I right after hitting puberty, between puberty and booze, that's what ran my life. That's what I looked for all the time. So I had no, I had religious educations and things like that, but that didn't mean anything to me. They were like myths or things like I'd read about any kind of mythology, whether it was Greek or Roman or King Arthur or anything. I just thought it was all bullshit and I wasn't interested in any kind of reform. I didn't even know there would be reform. So I went through the 22 years of that, and I can't tell you how much I hated AA, but I didn't have any options because that's the only way I'd know to go. And my poor mother, I think of it now, I never met my father till I was about 19 years old. He lived in Los Angeles, and he was a bartender. So anyway, I became a bartender. I learned out there. So I was always close to booze, either by selling it or buying it or being with it or being with a bunch of guys that like to drink. Then about after 22 years, I got really sick one time. And I didn't even get dried out. I just sweated out. And this friend of mine, Frank Gilchrist, I can use his last name now because he passed away. He took me to, he begged me to go with him to the Hyannis Men's Big Book Step Study meeting. And it was at the college then. It was a long, long time ago. It was about 32 years ago. And then I didn't stay there, and I came back like 1987, and then by then we had moved to Federated Church and then to St. Patrick's, and I never saw anything like it before in my life. There would be 80 guys, sometimes 111 guys I counted one time. These weren't philosophers and Nobel Prize winners, and all these are regular people, and they looked happy and kind of well adjusted. They didn't, but they had horror stories, and everybody had a horror story. Mine was the worst I ever heard because it happened to me, and yours probably is the worst that ever happened to you. So I didn't know how to manage the situation, so I said, I don't believe in it at all, but I'll do it. So I didn't have any thoughts of helping others or anything like that. I just wanted to get out of the jackpot that I was in. I resigned as a president of my company after 3 months in Big Book. And I started to write. So all these things have to do with, Did you do the work? That's the first time I ever heard that. It's like a guy would say, "Well, did you write? Did you do the step? Well, did you climb the mountain? I'd rather use a metaphor. Did you climb the mountain? Well, I went to L.L. Bean and I got the proper clothing for climbing a mountain. No, I'm not talking about that. Did you? What did you do? Well, I had no answers for anything. I didn't know what the hell was going on. So I said, I'm just going to do what they tell me. And whether I like it or not, I'm just going to try to do it because nothing in my life has worked before. And I was getting more and more desperate. So, well, I remember, you know, I used to be a teacher and I would have all these quotes and so forth, and I still know a lot of them, but nothing ever, they didn't mean anything. And the only time they ever meant anything is after I did this work, everything seemed to crystallize. And I knew then what tragedy was. I knew then what the stuff that I had been teaching was literature. And I knew all about that, but I didn't, it didn't relate to me. So I was very unhappy, and I didn't know how to handle anything. So one time I was in New York, I was depressed and I lost a lot of weight. I was clinically depressed. That was the first time I was ever clinically depressed. And I was thinking about 86 of myself, and I'd come to the Cape, I'd steal a boat, put chains in it, row out, and bring maybe four or five bottles of brandy, drink that till I, and then have a weight on me and get drowned and forget about it. I just didn't know how to live or how to recover. I didn't know anything at all. I just largely ignorant. So when I went to this meeting, everybody looked, I know everybody there seemed to me to be wiser than I. And they all, what they all had in common was pain. It's Aristotle said one time, all learning is accompanied by pain. It just doesn't come to you. You have to work for things. So I like this. Then I started getting into the big book, and I thought, this is pretty good. I mean, this, and I noticed there's some basic questions: who, what, where, why, when, and how. This book is very big into how. How many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And I remember Socrates saying, the unexamined life is not worth living. If you told me you, at some point you have to turn your life over to the care of God or agree to do that, that you had to put up an ante. The ante is you don't drink for one day. That's the price you paid again to this big spiritual game. So little by little, I saw these guys every week, and they looked pretty much, they were happy, and they were decent people, and they were helping other people. I learned later there's only three things in the universe. There's God or higher power, there's oneself, and then there's others. And how you relate to each of those three entities, your relationship you have with yourself, the relationship you have with others, and the relationship you had with whatever gods may be, whatever higher power there is, whatever it's yours or whomever it is, that's going to depend upon the quality of your life, and that's what's going to change you. It says here earlier, this our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. And the most cogent phrase in there is what happened. If you ask me, Bobby, you went 22 years to AA, sitting on aluminum chairs in all these kind of halls full of blue cigarette smoke, and what did you learn? It was about not drinking. And I never thought it was about some kind of a spiritual journey or anything like that until I got to the big book. And these guys are serious about those things, and they were actually doing the work. So they were recovering, and I wasn't. I was just waiting. How I managed it was through anger. Because I learned from a psychiatrist one time in New York, first you get hurt, like a guy pulls out in front of you in his car. First you get hurt. How can he do that to me? Then you get angry. And then depression follows. So here's how I solved that problem in my ignorance at that time. You know what I'm going to do? I'm never going to let myself slip into depression. So I'm just going to stay pissed the rest of my life. I'm just going to handle it through anger. And I would love anger, because I would be quoting the Iliad to people, an angry man, that is my story of Achilles of the house of Peleus, who wrought many troubles upon the Achaean host while the will of God moved on to fulfillment. So that's what I would do. I would and not either be pissed off through language or through insults or saying nasty things, being cynical, pessimistic, and not really being a nice man. I didn't realize how selfish I was. And I didn't know that these were important things. All these things that I learned toward this, all these steps, was in this book. It has the antidotes to the spiritual poisons that we have, that I had. With the selfishness and self-seeking, it offers altruism. Otra is in French means other. To be interested in other people. Instead of being so selfishness, there's altruism. Instead of the pride and ego drove me crazy. Freud called ego the conscious mediator between oneself and one's perception of reality. So the ego is never at rest. It's always on alert. Holy shit, that guy's got a better car than I got. But fuck him, I got a better girlfriend than he had. You're always measuring. He's got a better pair of shoes than I do. I better get one better shoe. I need to go to the shoe store tomorrow. And you're never at rest. You're always comparing and measuring up. And it drives me crazy. So I didn't know there was a conscious mediator between oneself and reality. And it's always refereeing that you're better than this guy or worse than, or they're worse than you are, or this or that. So wasn't too happy. Anyway, this is the most important thing I ever did in my life. And I lost this. Here's here. Book one, names, principal institutions, resentments, the analysis of the resentments, book one, analysis of the resentments, book two. That's why the turnarounds are hard. And fears and sex conduct. Okay. I lost that book when I moved to where I live now. I sold my home and moved here. And I lost it for 3 years. I had a lot of books. And I finally opened up one day and I saw those rings on the side of it, down deep in this box. And I was absolutely jubilant that I found it, that I had done this work and I still had it. So since then, I've had a happy sobriety, the thing that eluded me for 60 years until that... I never could believe that I would be as happy as I am. It's late in life now. I'm 87 now. I thought I'd be 86 when I was 86. But it's been the best thing I've ever done for myself. I'm not an angry person. I'm a cheerful person most of the time. And I have a really good life and I have excellent children. My daughter's a nurse at the hospital. I have a son who's autistic, Brandon. He's 41 years old now. He's held a job for 20 years at a market. He's happy. My ex-wife is happy. I'm happy that she's my ex-wife. Divorces are made in heaven. Anyway, I want to close this now. I want to end this with a song. No, I'm not going to do that. That's the thing I stole from Seinfeld, from the rabbi in Seinfeld. I'm going to end this speech with a song. And everybody gets, oh my God, they're dreadful. Anyway, Edward Arlington Robinson, probably one of my favorite poets, is always a person a critic one time said that he pictured the world as a prison house. And Robinson said in response, the world is not a prison house, but it's a kind of spiritual kindergarten where bewildered infants are trying to spell the name of God with the wrong blocks. Thank you.